Earlier this year, I did a series of sermons on the spiritual life in which I focused on our relationship to the Lord. After I got done with all of that, I thought to myself, there's just a whole bunch I left out because the other half of what the scripture is about is our relating to each other. So I decided to do a short series of messages on some of our relationships to one another. And I started that a few weeks ago, calling it the Christian Way of Life. And what I have in mind by this series is, what is the Christian way to relate to people? How do you relate to people in the various areas of your life? Well, some time ago I did the whole family series, so we talked about the relationship of husband to wife, wife to husband, parent to children, children to parent. But what we haven't talked about is the relationship of people in places like work or church or your relationship to your neighbor. So in this series, I'm going to just cover those kind of areas. What's the Christian way to relate to people at church, at work, to your neighbor? Well, we're in the middle of discussing how you relate to one another at church. And I've landed on those little phrases in the New Testament that say one another. They're all given in the context of our relationship to people at church. And we've started looking at them. I took some of those little phrases and I spoke on how to relate to one another. Now, I don't expect you to remember those. Truth of the matter is, I don't remember them. There was a handful of them. But to refresh your memory, I spoke on the fact that love was the big umbrella under which all of these fit. We are told to love one another. Beyond that, we are to greet one another. We're to sing to one another, which we just did. We are to fellowship with one another, pray for one another, have compassionate one toward another, and be kind one to another. But that does not exhaust the list of one another phrases. There are another group of phrases that have one another in them that could be called ministering to one another. As a matter of fact, this comes as a shock to some. I'm not the one that's in the ministry. According to the New Testament, you are. My job is to equip you to minister to one another. Now, if you want to have a biblical church, that's what you have to do. Well, now, what does that involve? That sounds scary. Am I supposed to be teaching you how to preach sermons? Not at all. No, that's not exactly the idea. We looked at some of these little phrases, one another, that focus on how to minister to people. And we talked about things like be hospitable, that using hospitality is ministering to somebody. We talked about the fact that you should bear one another's burdens. That's hospitality. Gone a little further. You're not just giving them food or housing. You're doing something else for them. And then we talked about the fact that you should be edifying one another, and that Greek word means to build people up. Those are more in the area of ministering to one another, not just relating to one another. But that list doesn't exhaust the one another phrases in the New Testament. There's more. And the ones that I haven't covered yet all have to do with relating to one another. So what I plan to do today is show you from the scripture how to minister to one another. I'm going to fulfill my job of equipping you to minister to one another. I'm going to ordain you today. So with that in mind, will you turn with me to Hebrews chapter 10. How do you minister to one another? Well, there are a number of phrases in the New Testament that tell us how to do that. We've looked at some. We're going to look at some more. Hebrews chapter 10. Verse 24, Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. There are two phrases in these two verses with one another in them. You're to consider one another, verse 24. You are to exhort one another, verse 25. We're going to look at both of those in some detail, but I want to start with exhorting one another. Now, for just a minute, I'm going to have to get a little technical, so bear with me. The Greek word that is translated exhort in Hebrews 10:25 is pregnant with meaning, and there's more than one baby in the womb. There are twins and triplets in this word. As a matter of fact, this word has so many different nuances in it, it is impossible to find one English word that conveys them all. There is no one word that adequately translates this one Greek word. So, let me give you a feel for the word. It means to call to one's aid. That's important. To summons. Hence, it means to appeal, to entreat. It's translated exhortation, encouragement, consolation, and comfort. All of those are legitimate translations of this word. And as you can see, there's no one English word that would encompass all of that. This word is used more than 100 times in the New Testament, and it's often translated something simple like, I beseech you. Remember Romans 12:1? I beseech you. This is the word. On other occasions, it's translated by something else. As a matter of fact, it is translated primarily by three different English words. And it's those three words I want to look at and talk about how we employ those words in ministering to one another. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look at this word and three translations of it, and then I'm going to look at another word, so there's 4 points to this message. I realize that I normally have three, but you get a bonus today. There's four. So the first word I want us to look at, or translation of this word, is the word comfort. To start there, turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. That's just forward a couple of chapters from Hebrews. But look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And look at verse 18. Paul says, therefore, comfort one another with these words. Now let me explain what's going on in this passage. Paul came to Thessalonica. He led people to Christ. He told them that Christ was coming back, and he left town. Now, they were of the opinion that Christ was coming back pretty soon, because Paul taught them that Christ could come back any moment. Well, when some people in their congregation passed away, they became very concerned. They wanted to know what's going to happen to these people that died before the Lord could come back. Are they going to miss the coming of the Lord? So Paul writes 1 Thessalonians in part to answer that question, and he does so in chapter 4, beginning at verse 13 and going through verse 18. He ends that passage by assuring them that those who've passed away won't miss out. And then he ends by saying, wherefore, I want you to comfort one another with these words. Now, the Greek word that's translated comfort in 1 Thessalonians 4:18 is the exact same word that's translated exhorting one another in Hebrews 10:25. Isn't that interesting? Told you, this word is very broad. All right, then let's focus for a minute on the word comfort. One scholar, authority on Greek words, says that the word comfort means to encourage, exhort, comfort, and extol. And then he points out there's another word that's translated comfort. Now, we're dealing with the one that's translated exhortation in Hebrews 5. But the reason I bring up there's another one is that one of these words tends to look at more or less the will. That's the one we're looking at. The other one is more or less directed toward the emotions. But we're looking at the one that more or less is directed toward the will. Here's what I want to know. How do you comfort one another? That verse says you're supposed to comfort one another, right? It's my job to teach you how to minister one another, right? How do you do that? All right, I'm going to give you three principles of ministry. You need to remember these because we're locking the doors, and the only way you get to leave this morning is if you can repeat these three when I get done. All right? Number one, the first thing you need to do is real simple. Anybody can do this. You need to be there. How are you going to comfort them if you aren't in their presence? As a matter of fact, back in Hebrews it says, consider one another and don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, because if you forsake the premises, you can't be present to comfort or exhort the person. As a matter of fact, I remember a minute ago I told you what this word meant, and I said it's to call to one's aid. It's to come alongside and minister to somebody. Embedded in the word is the idea that you are physically present. So the first principle of ministry is you got to be there. When I was in seminary, I pastored a church right outside of Dallas, Texas, quite a ways outside of Dallas, Texas. And I hadn't finished seminary yet when somebody in my congregation died. And I thought, what am I going to do now? We hadn't covered that in class yet. How am I supposed to know what to do? And I called an older pastor, and he said, I said, well, what do I say? That was my big concern. What do I say? I will never forget. This was one of those teachable moments for me. This older pastor said, Mike, just go. Just be there. Don't worry about what you say. That'll take care of itself. All you need to be concerned about is just be there. And from that day till this, it's made a profound impact on what I do when I perceive that people are hurting. You've just got to be there. That alone ministers to people. Worst thing you can do is leave them in isolation. So get to them and just be there. I have a second suggestion. Did you get that one down? Remember, it's your ticket out of here. Be there. All right, second one. Second thing you need to do is, now you can do this. Listen. Listen. If somebody is grieving, if they are sorrowing, which is what this passage is all about in 1 Thessalonians, then what you need to do is just listen. You need to listen. Matter of fact, I think when it says in Hebrews, consider one another, that the whole idea here is that you are going to pay close attention to that person, and that at least includes the idea of listening. As a matter of fact, the Greek word translated consider means, and I quote, to take note of, perceive, and consider carefully. Now, how do you do that? Are you supposed to read their body language? No, you pay careful attention. You consider them by listening to them. So, the way to minister to somebody, these are principles of ministry. Number one, you be there. Number two, you listen. This is a problem for Christians. Because if you know a little bit about the Bible, what you want to do is back up with your dump truck and dump a Bible, a bunch of Bible on them, right? Don't preach, just listen. Just listen. I read recently that 90% of the people who go to a professional counselor do not want answers. They want somebody to listen. Now, I need to put one caveat in this. There may be an exception, especially if you're talking about somebody who is bereaved. They may not be ready to talk just yet, so don't force them to talk. Just go and listen. If they don't want to talk, then just be there. But most people will want to talk. For 10 years, I was on the call list for Forest Lawn Mortuary. They have a list of pastors that if you go in and you need a pastor to conduct a funeral and don't have one, they have a list and they try to match you up with somebody on that list. And for 10 years, I was on the list. In other words, I conducted lots of funerals in 10 years, several hundred. One day, at one of those funerals, somebody requested that I let the congregation speak. And I obliged them, and at one point in the service, we just said, would anybody like to share what you remember about the person that had deceased? I was overwhelmed with how well that went and how effective it was. And so I made it a practice to just do that. I would always ask the family if they wanted me to, and virtually every family I ever asked said, oh, by all means. And that became a very integral part of the services I conducted for Forest Lawn. What I discovered was this: that ministered to them more than my sermon. Now, that's very humiliating. But it's true. It's true. That when people are hurting, they want to talk. So you need to listen. So I just told you you were in the ministry, but I didn't tell you you were a preacher yet. One-on-one, you need to learn to listen. That is very, very important. All right, number one,
be there.
Woo, I'm impressed. Number two, oh, good, good. You want lunch, that's what you want. All right, number three, identify. No, I'm the preacher, I get away with it. Number three, identify with them. Identify with them. Now, I think if you're going to, why would the writer to the Hebrews say, consider them? Because he wants you to relate to them at their level, right? How do you do that? Well, this is just common sense, folks. They have to feel that you understand. Well, how are you going to say to them, I understand? And by the way, just saying it doesn't cut it. Rather, what you need to do is relate to them something similar that's happened to you. Doesn't have to be the exact thing, but it needs to be similar in principle. And if you have not had anything like that happen, then at least tell them about somebody you know that it happened to, and speak to the way they feel. That's critical. Talk about their emotion. If you can't think of anything that's happened to you, and you don't know anybody it's happened to, then make up a story. You said, you have got to be kidding me. No, I'm dead serious. That's what Jesus did, and we call it parables. Do you think if there was a man that ran away from home in the audience, he would have identified with the parable of the prodigal son? He told that story. And every prodigal that's ever lived, that's ever read it since, said, wow, how did he know? That's what you're looking for. Now, I'm not suggesting you deceive them in any way. Tell them you're making it up. Let me tell you how the professional psychologists do it. You're trained, if you're a professional psychologist, to regurgitate what they said. Same thing. So just say, now let me see if I understand, and just tell them what they just told you, and they'll say, oh, you understand. That's very important. Very important. But you got to identify with them. They have to identify with you. So, tell them a story. I'll tell you how I learned this. Back in that little church I pastored many years ago, there was a lady in my congregation who, she and her husband owned a filling station. They lived above it in this rural area in Texas. He got a terminal disease, and she had to take care of him for months and months, run the business. And after I forgot, 6-9 months, she died. I'm sorry, he died. At that point, she was exhausted. She was spent. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, she was shot. Well, by this time, I had learned it is my job to go see her. So I go trucking over to comfort her. She listened to me. I tried to read some passages of Scripture. I tried to do all the pastoral stuff, you know. This lady was too exhausted to put up with me, and she finally said, Pastor, I understand that you mean well, but you just don't understand. You've never had a mate that died. And I thought to myself, you know what? She's dead right. Well, I knew somebody her age. She was an older lady. I knew somebody her age whose husband had died. So I paid a visit to that lady and said, I'm now ordaining you for the ministry. You got to go see her. So what do I do? Just go see her. She's going to tell you how she feels. And you're going to say, I know what you're talking about. And when you get done, she's going to know that you know how she feels. And that is going to minister to her. You think you could do that? Think you could tell somebody about your experience that was similar to theirs? Yes. That is ministry. Got these three principles? Be there, listen, relate, or identify. The key word is identify here, by telling them something that they know you understand. Now, I've got a fourth principle, but this one only applies to the word comfort, and I just want to throw it out. The issue here is hope. Back in verse 13, Paul says, we sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. So, if there's anything you can do when people are really hurting and grieving, it's somehow give them hope. In the case of a departed loved one, part of the hope is that we're going to see them again when the Lord comes back or when we go to be with the Lord. So, hope should be thrown in here. Now, I want to say one other thing before I move to the next word, and that is this. This has been talking about somebody who's passed away, and you're going to go comfort them. But I just want to insert in here, life is full of losses that produce sorrow and grieving. Anytime anybody loses anything, and they are hurt by it, they need comfort. So this applies to more than just losing a loved one or a friend. This applies to someone who just lost a job. This applies to someone who just lost their health because of a serious illness. Or anything else, perhaps of less consequence, but they are feeling the loss. Then what you need to do is go minister to them. And the way you do it is... be there, listen, identify. Oh, you're doing very well. Somebody has written, and I don't know who. I can't give solutions to all of life's problems, doubts, or fears, but I can listen to you, and together we'll search for answers. I can't change your past with all of its headaches and pain, nor the future with its untold stories, but I can be there when you need me to care. Your joys, triumphs, successes, and happinesses are not mine, yet I can share in your laughter. I can't keep your heart from breaking and hurting, but I can cry with you and help you pick up the pieces and put them back in place. I can't solve the problem, but I can love you and be your friend. That is how you minister to somebody. That's comfort. I told you this was a multifaceted word, so let's go back to Hebrews. I want to talk about exhortation. The same word translated comfort in one passage is translated exhortation in several others, including one in Hebrews chapter 10 and in one in Hebrews chapter 3. Now, what's the need so that you should exhort somebody? I don't have the time to do this morning. I should, but I don't, because I'm trying to cram too much into this. I want you to get the sweep of this. But in the book of Hebrews, there were Jewish Christians who were contemplating, apparently, deserting Christianity and going back to Judaism. The point of the book of Hebrews is that you go on to maturity. Don't stagnate. Don't go back. Go on. And so in chapter 3, and again in chapter 10, he uses the word exhortation. So I take it that in the context of this book, exhortation is urging people to keep going. That's radically different than comfort. As a matter of fact, the Greek word translated exhort in secular Greek meant to urge. Remember I told you it was in Hebrews 12:1, I beseech you, I urge you. That's exhortation. So exhortation implies that there's a goal out there and I want you to go stretch yourself to meet that goal. That is exhortation. One authority on Greek words says that it means to urge. And then he quotes Plato, who said, Plato used this word to exhort men to apply their minds to thinking. So he urges them. It was also used in ancient Greek of exhorting troops who were about to go into battle. So here's the picture. When people are slacking off, you should urge them, you should encourage them to continue and go on and reach the goal. All right, how do you do that? There are three principles of ministry. Number one is?
Be there.
Woo, you're doing very good. Number two is?
Intercession.
Number three is?
Identify.
That's the way you exhort people. That's it. You go be there, put your arm around them, listen to them, and then you identify with them before you say anything. Don't preach. Listen, and then exhort. And the way you do that is you remind them of the goal. If you want to exhort, by the way, exhortation is very difficult. Usually the way preachers try to exhort people is they bark orders at them. You know, that doesn't exhort anybody. I take that back. It does. It works on some people, but not long. It wears out. But what you can do is challenge them to say, here's the goal, and urge them to go toward the goal. That motivates people. That exhorts people. So that's the idea behind the word exhort. There's an old adage that says, give a man a good name and he will live up to it. Not a bad idea. Somebody wrote, and again, I don't know who. This letter was left behind from a son who ran away from home. Dear folks, thank you for everything, but I'm going to Chicago to try and start a new life. You asked me why I gave you so much trouble, and the answer is easy for me to give you, but I wonder if you'll understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want you to just listen to me? I remember all those nice things you gave me for Christmas and my birthday, and I was really happy with those things. for about a week. But the rest of the time, I didn't really want presence. I just wanted you to listen to me like I wanted somebody who felt things too. But you said you were too busy. Mom, you're a wonderful cook, and you have everything so clean, and you were so tired so much from doing so many things because you were so busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked to have had crackers and peanuts just as much if you had only sat down with me during the day and said to me, tell me all about it. Maybe I can help. I think all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing their hair about, worrying what's really looking for someone that will have time to listen a few minutes and who will treat them as if they were grown-ups who might be useful to them, you know? Anyone ask where I am, tell them I'm gone looking for somebody with time because I've got a lot of things to talk about. Love to all, your son. You either listen or you lose them. So if somebody is slacking off, don't go preach. Go listen. And then you'll have a basis for ministry. All right. Should we keep going? We're half done. Two more hours and we'll be finished. All right. Turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. 1 Thessalonians again, chapter 3, and look at verse 2. He said, he sent Timothy our brother to minister minister of God and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ to establish you and encourage you concerning your faith. Encourage you concerning your faith. Now, I need to explain something. This is the same Greek word. It was translated exhort in Hebrews. It's translated comfort in 1 Thessalonians 5. And here it is translated encourage. Technically, there's no place in the New Testament that says encourage one another. But since this is the same word that is used in that phrase, I'm going to take the liberty to include it. And there is a gift of exhortation and encouragement. So I'm going to talk about it as if it's separate. Admittedly, there's some overlap here, and I understand that. I think the difference between exhortation and encouragement is that in exhortation, they've sort of let things slide. They're sloughing off. Whereas here, they're just sort of sliding into discouragement, and they need encouragement. Or another difference is they need courage. So you need to encourage. All right, the question is, how do we do that? Well, there are principles of ministry. Number one, got a little weak. Did I catch you off guard? Number two,
listen.
Number three, all right, that's how you encourage somebody. You've got to go be there, listen, listen, listen. Have I made that plain? Then figure out how to identify and then encourage them. This particular Greek word used in the sense of encouragement was used in the ancient world in speeches of leaders and soldiers urging each other on. As a matter of fact, it was used of the faint-hearted, one who needed, whose nerves they needed to strengthen their feeble arms for fight. It was used of people that were about to go into dangerous situations, and they were encouraging them to go on. So that's the idea. I'm going to give you courage. Now, how do you do that? Well, I've laid out these three things, but let me mention a fourth in this case. Encourage them in the faith. Now, I think he's talking about the Christian faith, but I think he's also talking about the fact that if you want to be encouraged, you've got to believe. Now, let me just give you a little suggestion. One of the things you can do to encourage people to believe is you believe in them. So instead of jumping on them and saying, you didn't do it, did you? What you do is say, you know what? I think you can do this. Get the picture? That's encouragement. A Christian counselor named Larry Crabb has written a book on encouragement. And in it he says, encouragement is the kind of expression that helps someone want to be a better Christian, even when life is tough. He also says encouragement is, the theme of this subject is encouragement through careful selection of words that are intended to influence another person meaningfully toward increased godliness. Then he says this. I recall standing by the finish line at many track meetings, waiting for my son to come straining down the last stretch of a 2-mile run, exhausted by the labor of pushing himself to the limit and sometimes bothered by a variety of aches and cramps. He was sorely tempted to collapse 50 yards short of the finish line. As each one of the team runners came into view, the line of pudgy, out-of-shape fathers would take up the cry. Come on, only a few more yards to go. Push, push, kick your legs. You can do it. And most of those young athletes would respond to those words by grinning with a grin of determination, narrowing their eyes, pumping their legs with renewed strength until they crossed the finish line. I have never heard a father call out to one of his sons during the final stretch saying, you look tired. Why don't you quit? You're in the back third of the field anyway. Maybe running is not your sport. And yet I have heard a Christian say to a young man after he had taught his first Sunday school class, when is the regular teacher coming back? Get the message? All right. We've looked at one word that has three meanings, three nuances: comfort, exhortation, and encouragement. I want to look at one more word. Bear with me for just a minute. Turn to Romans chapter 15. This is a different word, but it all has to do with ministry, and I think we need to look at it. Romans chapter 15. And look at verse 14. Romans chapter 15, verse 14 says, now I myself am confident concerning you, brethren, that you also are full of goodness, filled with knowledge, able to admonish one another. Now this is an entirely different word. When I first got introduced to this word years ago, many years ago, I was told that it meant that somebody has stepped out of line and you are to blame them. That is, you are to point out that they are blamable and tell them to step back in line. I labored under the opinion that that was the meaning of this word for years. It is not. As a matter of fact, the meaning of this word, the basic meaning of the word, is to put in mind. And it does not necessarily mean that the person has stepped out of line. How do I know that? Because in 1 Corinthians 10, we are told that the Old Testament was given for our admonishment. In 2 Corinthians 3:16, we are to admonish one another in song. So neither one of those cases has to do with anybody stepping out of line. However, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14, it says, warn the unruly. And the word warn is this word translated admonish in Romans 15. Unruly does have the idea that you've stepped out of line. It was used of soldiers that had stepped out of rank. And the sergeant says, step back. So, while the word does not always have this connotation, it does have it in some passages. That leads me to suggest, especially in light of the way it's used in Romans 15, that in this case, what you're doing is you're admonishing somebody who has either stepped out of line or thinking about it of their responsibility. Not the goal, their responsibility. In Romans chapter 14 and 15, the issue is the way they treat one another, especially weaker brothers. And he's saying that you ought to receive them, that you ought to admonish those who are strong, that they not hurt the weak. And so there is that slight connotation. But the reason I had you turn to this verse is notice what it says you have to have. You have to be full of knowledge, or full of goodness, filled with knowledge, and that you're able to admonish one another. So, if you're going to admonish one another, the first thing you have to have are the three principles of ministry, and the three principles of ministry are?
Be there.
Listen. Identify. I'm one of you. I'm in the congregation now. And this is what all of us need to do. If you're going to minister to anybody on any subject, at any level, they got to know you love them. You got to be there. You got to listen. And they got to know you understand, or you're not going to get the first base. Am I right? So that applies to admonition too. All right? What else can you tell me? Well, look at this passage. You have to be filled with goodness. That word implies kindness. You have to have knowledge. In this case, it's knowledge about doubtful things. What Paul is saying in this verse is that he says you have enough Christian character and spiritual maturity that you would not injure the spiritual life of a weaker brother by disregarding their conscience. There's one other verse, and that is over in 2 Thessalonians that's used. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, it's talking about somebody that's quit working, and it tells you to go admonish them, same word, that are disorderly. And then he says this, do not count him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. Very interesting statement. As one commentator said, while its tone is brotherly, it's big brotherly. So there's no doubt here that you're saying when somebody steps out of line, you go to them, you be there, you listen, you identify, but at the same time, you hold them to their responsibility. Okay? So you've stepped out of line, now you need to step back in. So, let's sum all this up. Have you learned anything this morning? You got those three principles of ministry down? All right, that's what I want you to remember. But let me just talk for a minute. I could go on and on about this. What I'm telling you is this. The way to minister to one another is come alongside to help, to comfort, to exhort, to encourage, to admonish by being there, listening, identifying, and then speaking to the specific situation that they're in at the moment. So, if they're sorrowing, give them hope. You comfort them by giving them hope. If they're slacking off, you exhort them by reminding them of the goal. If they're slipping into the pit of discouragement, you encourage them in the faith. Has to do with the belief system. And if they're stepping out of line, then you admonish them concerning their responsibility. Comfort ministers to their emotions. Exhortation reminds them of the goal. Admonition puts something in their head. And also, it tells them, you got to step back in line so it appeals to their will. Now, I want to wrap this up, but I need to say a couple of things. One is, you can do this. Do you think you can do this? Have I convinced you? Okay. There are ministries in the New Testament that you need a little more training for. So I just want to mention in passing that the little phrase, one another, never occurs in connection with teaching, reproving, rebuking, or restoration. Matter of fact, Galatians 6:1 says, you which are spiritual, which means mature, go restore. That takes a little more skill, and not every Christian can do that. But the ones I've mentioned this morning, every Christian could and should do. So I hereby ordain you. You're in the ministry now. So don't forsake the assembly, because you need to come so you can minister. That's what biblical Christianity is about. I'm going to read another piece. I have no idea who wrote it. I think somebody emailed it to me. But it sort of says what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way. One day a teacher asked her students to list the names of other students in the room on two sheets of paper, leaving a space between each name. Then she told them to think of the nicest thing they could say about each other's in the class and to write it down. It took the remainder of the class period to finish their assignment, but as the students left the room, each one handed in the papers. That Saturday, the teacher wrote down the name of each student on a separate piece of paper and listed what everybody else said about that individual. On Monday, she gave each student his or her list. Before long, the entire class was smiling. "Really?" she heard whispered. "I never knew I meant anything to anyone. And I didn't know others liked me so much," were some of the comments she heard. No one ever mentioned those papers in class again. She never knew if they discussed them after class or with their parents, but it didn't matter. The exercise had accomplished its purpose. The students were happy with themselves and one another. That group of students moved on. Several years later, one of the students was killed in Vietnam, and his teacher attended the funeral of that special student. She had never seen a serviceman in a military coffin before. He looked so handsome, so mature. The church was packed with friends. One by one, those who loved him took a last walk by the coffin. The teacher was the last one to pass by. As she stood there, one of the soldiers who acted as a pallbearer came up to her. "Were you Mark's math teacher?" he asked. She nodded yes. Then he said, "Mark talked about you a lot." After the funeral, most of Mark's former classmates went together for a luncheon. Mark's mother and father were there, obviously waiting to speak to the teacher. "We want to show you something," his father said, taking his wallet out of his pocket. "They found this on Mark when he was killed. We thought you might recognize it." Opening the billfold, he carefully removed two worn pieces of notebook paper that had obviously been taped and folded and refolded many times. The teacher knew without looking that the papers were one on which he had listed all the good things each of Mark's classmates had said about him. "Thank you so much for doing that," Mark's mother said. As you can see, Mark treasured it. All of Mark's former classmates started to gather around. Charlie smiled rather sheepishly and said, "I still have my list. It's in the top drawer of my desk at home." Chuck's wife said, "Chuck asked me to put it in our wedding album." "I have mine too," Marilyn said. "It's in my diary." Then Vicky, another classmate, reached into her pocket, took out her wallet, and showed her worn, frazzled list to the group. "I carry this with me all the time," Vicky said without batting an eyelash. And she continued, "I think we all saved our list." That's when the teacher sat down and cried. She cried for Mark and for all his friends who would never see him again. What I'm trying to say to you is that words of love and encouragement, even exhortation and admonition, are desperately needed and deeply appreciated. We as a congregation need to start just loving one another. Amen. I don't mean to imply by that we aren't loving one another. I think there's a lot of love in this congregation. I just mean to say we need to minister to one another, because one of these days, some of us aren't going to be here. You're going to wish I had said, "Go do it now." Father, thank you for putting us in the ministry. Our prayer is that you would make us sensitive to people so that we can minister to them in a deeply significant, heartfelt way so that we can encourage them in the faith. In Jesus' name I pray.